Radio Land. We're coming to you live from the Pickup Country 104.9 Irvin Studio. This is Come On Home, bringing you the people news and views that make Irvin, Ravenna, and Estill County, Kentucky's hometown. I'm your host, Goosehead Joe. How is everybody out there today? It's a beautiful day outside. I hope you have the opportunity to enjoy it. And we're going to jump right into what we got today. We've got some exciting things going on. And without further ado, I would like to welcome from Hospice Care Plus, Brenna Wallhauser. Welcome, ma'am.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. Now, Hospice, of course, is a fantastic organization, and we'll get into that a little bit more and talk about some of the things that you all do.
Sure.
But let's jump right in. You have an exciting event here in Irvin coming up very soon. So yeah. Let the folks know.
Well, it is our second. This is the second one. Color of Hope Hospice 5K. It's a color run, color walk, color roll. However you want to get through the 5K is entirely up to you. We did it last year for the first time. And we were a little bit surprised. Sometimes it takes an event a while to get off the ground.
Right.
But we had about 150 people who came from really all over Kentucky, including a lot of local people, who came out. And, oh, my gosh, we had a blast. It was just a really family-friendly, fun event. And we liked it so much, we decided to do it again. So this year, it is going to be on Saturday, September 26th. Some of the logistics are that the race does start at 9 o'clock. People check in between, say, 8 and 8:45. If you've pre-registered, it's a quick check-in. If you haven't registered yet, it takes a little longer. It's over pretty quickly, depending on how you decide to walk or
run.
Right,
how fast you move.
Yeah, it doesn't take all that long. I will go ahead and share the registration information. You can actually register online, and it's super easy. You can do that through hospicecareplus.org, hospicecareplus.org, or you can pick up a paper form at any Citizens Guarantee Bank location in Berea, Richmond, or Irvin. So that makes it super easy. There's still time to get in under the early bird deadline. The early bird deadline is that you have to register by the end of September 18th.
Right.
If you do it by then, you're guaranteed to get the size of the t-shirt you want, and you're guaranteed to get the free t-shirt. And you also get a little bit of a price break on the registration. It's $25 for early bird. After the 18th, it's going to be $30, and you still might get a t-shirt, but we can't guarantee it.
Sure.
Because we order based on those early bird registrations. Children 5 and under are free.
Cool.
You do get the free t-shirt. You get a free bag with some giveaways in it. Last year, I can tell you, we make the t-shirt white so that the colors show.
Right.
And last year, most people wore the t-shirt that they got, that white t-shirt. And the way a color run or color walk works is that we have volunteers at different stations along the route. And we're armed. I got to do this last year. It was lots of fun. We're armed with these ketchup bottles full of brightly. It's really brightly colored cornstarch powder. It's what the dyes are made of, and the powder or the color rather. And we shake those at you as you go by. And some people want tons, and they'll just kind of slow down so you can really cover them. And some people just want a little bit, and they'll go by a little quicker. And then periodically at the finish line, we have color parties. And that's where you get a little small Ziploc bags, those tiny ones of different colors. And everybody gets together in a group and they just throw them up in the air.
Right.
And those were lots of fun, too. If you're curious about what this looks like, you can go to our Facebook page. Just search for Hospice Care Plus on Facebook. And we have an album with like 100 photographs from last year. People brought their dogs, and their dogs were all colorful. Their kids, themselves. There were lots of teams, businesses who came, or families who made a team. And that's something we're adding this year. We did not have a team registration last year, but we do this year. You can identify your team captain, list your team members, and we're going to have a trophy for best team costume.
Oh.
Because people got into that a little bit last year, too. So this year, you can feel free to take that as far as you want it. People have worn tutus and tube socks of all colors and all kinds of things. So it's a fun event, and I have to give a quick shout out to Citizens Guarantee Bank, because it's really Kathy and Regina and Jeannie and the other staff there who have kind of made this go and taken real ownership of it. Several local volunteers are a big part of planning it. Local government's been wonderful and local officials about helping local businesses. So we're committed to keeping it in Irvin. It's just been a great setting for it.
Well, and it's really cool because this is one of those type events that you see in Lexington all the time. But to see an event like this in a small town is fairly rare. And to see it, you know, being successful, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, I think so, too. And it just, I think Irvin's the perfect setting for it in lots of ways. And I love that it brought dozens of people from outside Irvin to Irvin, too, to kind of see what Irvin has to offer. So, yeah, it's been amazing. And all the proceeds do go to Hospice Care Plus. So every penny raised goes to support our programs and our services. And of course, we do serve Estill County. So that's another perfect reason for it to be here. And we didn't have a special event in the area. We have some fundraisers in Berea and Richmond. Have had one recently in McKee, Batesville and Boonville, but hadn't had one in Irvin for a while. So we really were so grateful that Citizens Guarantee Bank and the local volunteers who make up the committee decided to work with us on it, because it's been awesome.
Well, and I can speak from experience as well. Citizens Guarantee is just wonderful to work with.
They are.
They're very supportive of EDA and all of our efforts, and I never can thank them enough. They're a sponsor of this show. So we definitely try to give them props where they're due, because they're a very humble organization and really don't toot their own horns.
So they just care a lot, and that's great. Community banking like that is not so common anymore, so it's wonderful to see. And I want to give props to you guys too, because you're a sponsor and you do the live remote, and that was part of what I think made such a real festive atmosphere last year. The music was great, having you guys there to kick it off. So really appreciate you guys and Citizens Guarantee Bank, because it was just a great first go around last year, and we're looking forward to making it a real tradition. You know, this is the second one, but we want to do this every year.
That's wonderful. And Ethan, of course, does a fantastic job. He, all of you folks who were listening to Ethan handle Tradio today, he's always a real bright spot, and makes everybody smile when otherwise you might not be smiling. So big props out to the big E man over there in Stanton this morning. One thing that I would like to highlight is, this isn't your typical, which obviously with the color, it makes it different, but it's not your typical, you know, really buckle down and race kind of 5K.
No, it's untimed. Right. So that might be important for people who are maybe like me.
That's very important.
To know. Yeah, it is untimed. Now, it doesn't rule out. We had some runners there last year who timed themselves.
Sure.
You can still set your own personal goal. Time yourself. Serious runners always time themselves anyway. So time yourself and set a goal. But it is untimed. It's really just fun. But having said that, there were definitely people, many people, who walked the entire race. But there were others who used it as an opportunity just to try to meet a simple goal. Mine, when I first ran a 5K, was no time attached to it at all. Just keep running was my role. See if I can go 3.1 miles without not running.
Right.
So, you know, you can still set a goal like that. And if you, if you're interested in doing that, there are online resources for little quick training things for how to do a 5K for the first time.
Oh, yeah, the Couch to 5K.
Couch to 5K. But I would say the best advice, if you want to do it and you just want to walk, is just go walking in the evenings. And that's a good way to get yourself ready for it. But I was really happy last year with the number of children who were there. People really, and like I said, pets, there were several dogs too. So people really treated it as a family event. And that's what we wanted.
Definitely.
We had, it just had a nice feel to it from start to finish. We had Mr. Delvin Reese lead us in a prayer before we got started. Kathy Samples, who was our board president at the time and is still on our board, spoke just for a minute. You know, we didn't want to spend a lot of time doing that kind of thing, but we wanted to have a chance to thank people. So she said a few words. And then, of course, you guys in the live remote just really made it very special. So we're thinking that it will become a real nice tradition for the area.
It is wonderful. And such a great cause to be getting out and supporting. And, You know, as you look into the future, it's wonderful to see something that's actually successful the first year. Mm-hmm. And it speaks volumes that it did well enough that you want to do it a second time.
Oh, yeah. we don't always have those. So.
That's right.
That's very
and
nice.
I can speak from experience there, too. You know, sometimes you have a great idea or what you think is a great idea, but it just doesn't pan out. So
yeah.
It's wonderful to see things progressing and moving
mm-hmm.
forward.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, to reiterate that, this isn't one of those buckle down and just for people that run.
Right.
You know, those, and which I feel that they're crazy people, but they're a lot healthier than me. Those folks that get up, you know, at the crack of dawn and, you know, they run 5 miles every morning. I could only wish I could do that. But but this is an opportunity if you'd like to follow the route and get in a race that's not a super competitive race and offer a good cause. It's
right.
a great opportunity for you. Now, as far as the route,
right?
Where is everything starting?
223 Broadway, so not far from the station here.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's the same route as the Mushroom Festival's 5K. Is that right?
I believe so.
And so it's you might do a better job of explaining. Do you remember?
It's the Irvin School Apartments.
Irvin School Apartments, right.
The old Irvin Grade School.
And yeah.
So you're coming down, well, you'd be going up Broadway, I guess, toward downtown,
uh-huh.
Cutting around Court Street and then back up River Drive.
Right.
I don't remember which street you cut back across to Broadway, though.
Well, and I was at a station throwing powder on people, so I don't remember either. But yeah, it's roughly that. That's the good. I just remember corner of Lily and 223.
Mm-hmm.
Irvin School Apartments is where we start things out, and you really don't have to get there too far in advance of the race if you pre-register. It's really easy to pick up your bag and your t-shirt because we'll have all your information. But if you want to register that day,
mm-hmm.
just make sure you're there about 15 after 8:30. Because we do try to shut registration down about 8:45.
Right.
And that'll give you plenty of time to register and get in line, not be rushed.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. And it's, is this one of those, you know, pistol starts? Everybody goes at the same time?
You know, I don't remember how we did it. Did Ethan do it? At the live remote?
I don't know.
I cannot remember how we start. There were no pistols involved, that I remember. But I don't remember what got us going. So I'll have to think about that. But yeah, it's everybody started beautifully. I was at a station just around the curve of Broadway with mm-hmm. my colors. I think it was the first color station. And you know, well, let me back up and say I love the name because
yes.
a lot of people maybe are hesitant to associate the word hope with hospice.
Right.
But I'll talk more about why that's not true in a second. But what I liked about it that day was that we had a number of walkers who were cancer survivors.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a big deal for them to do the race and complete it. It was very celebratory.
Yeah.
Happy. It was one of the most uplifting events I'd been at in a long time. I guess that's the best way to describe it. But I also like that because people can have a misconception about hospice care and what it looks like and
mm-hmm.
what it's for. And sometimes they picture someone being a patient who, let's say, is bedbound and barely conscious, not able to talk in their last days or hours. And the truth of the matter is, you know, that we often have patients for months at a time, that our purpose in working with the patient is to give them the best quality of life possible so they can achieve things that they need to achieve.
Right.
And that's what hope looks like to us, and hospice is about hope for
mm-hmm.
us. I mean, gosh, if you follow us on Facebook, you've seen a collection of what we call bucket list stories.
Right.
For instance, we have patients who have bucket list wishes, and they might be as simple as, I need to see my granddaughter. I haven't seen her in 4 years and I miss her. Or it might be, I need to travel to Florida one more time to see my sister.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a wedding, several weddings actually, but
right.
there was one that means a lot to me that took place just last year. So these are people who may be in the last months of their lives, but there's all kinds of hope. It's hope that you can be at home
mm-hmm.
with your loved ones. Hope that you can kind of be in control those last months, you know,
right.
about what you do, what happens to you, when you sleep, when you eat. You lose that control sometimes when you're in other settings.
Right.
And so that's what we try to bring to patients and families. So when we were trying to name this race, We did call it The Color of Hope, and we wanted it to be very upbeat because we feel like when we watch our patients and families and how they deal with things and how they cope and the meaningful things that they do with those last months, it's uplifting to us. And so we wanted to bring that to it.
Well, and that's a beautiful explanation, and that matches up well with, as you referenced, the Facebook page and seeing some of those stories that are shared that are just so touching. Mm-hmm. And to be able to see some of these folks who may have otherwise had no hope,
right?
To be able to achieve some of these things that, yeah. And it's beautiful. And if it doesn't bring tears to your eyes, then you're too hard, you know.
But they're good tears.
They're great tears.
they're really happy tears. And I think that if you follow our Facebook page, you saw the baptism story from a few, yes, weeks ago, and that was one that. And for those listeners who do know the story, I can give you a little backroom information that wasn't on the page that adds more depth to what happened there. But we had a patient who was at the center at our Compassionate Care Center in Richmond. Mm-hmm. He needed pain and symptom management, so he was there. And he had been a practicing Christian all of his life. He was a Catholic, I believe, in childhood, and converted to the Baptist faith, mm-hmm, in his early adulthood, and had been a strong practitioner. So he wasn't a recent convert, but as he was at the center and he realized that he had probably just days to live, he decided he wanted to call his family in. So they came from South Carolina, they came from other states, and he wanted them all there with him, because he wanted a chance to express to them and show them what his faith looked like. And right, he wanted to have his family around him. So he asked for a full immersion baptism. Mm-hmm. And because he hadn't had that yet as an adult Christian. So he wanted to go to his church, which was in Boonville, I believe. And we did not, at first we thought we could find a non-emergent transport and pay the funds they would, right, need to get him there. But then his physician felt he really was not able to make that trip safely. So we explained that to him, and he was sad because he wanted nothing more than to do this in his congregation with his congregants and with his family there.
Right.
But he still wanted to do it. And so we told him we'd do what we could, and we contacted a few different places that had those large feeding trowels, you know, mm-hmm, what I'm talking about, for farm animals. And Southern States in Richmond said, I can loan you one if you'll come get it. So we came to get it. We put white sheets on it, soft blankets in it, filled it with warm water. And his pastor came from his church in Boonville to conduct it, and he did it with his family around him in our living room at the Compassionate Care Center. So this was, you know, that was his bucket list wish, if you,
right,
want, you know,
right,
was not just to be baptized, but to do it with his whole family around him, because he wanted them to witness it, not for his sake only, but also for theirs.
Right.
He wanted them to see that example of what faith looks like. So it was beautiful. And it brought tears to everybody's eyes, but they were really hopeful tears.
Right.
They
great
were good tears.
Well, and these are the kind of stories that happen time and time again from hospice. And you all are such a great organization. And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back and talk some more about Hospice Care Plus in just a moment. You're listening to Come On Home. Welcome back to Come On Home with Goosehead Joe. Again, I am joined in the studio this morning by Brenna Wallhauser from Hospice Care Plus. Brenna, can you back up just a little bit? And for those folks who aren't familiar with hospice in general, just a little bit about exactly what hospice is, and then more specifically about your organization.
Oh, sure. Well, we've been around for about 33 years now. Mm-hmm. We were founded in Richmond by a group of women, mostly, who in the early 80s, so 81 is when we were founded, felt like there had to be another alternative to make sure that people at the end of life had dignity, compassion, and the kind of expert care that you need at that point. So that's been 33 years ago. It wasn't long after that we added those other counties. We serve six counties: Estill, Lee, Jackson, Madison, Rockcastle, and Owsley counties. Mm-hmm. Those are our six counties. And we are a nonprofit organization. All hospices in Kentucky are. There are some in other states that are for-profit, but we don't fit into that category. Our main program, of course, is our home program, Hospice at Home.
Right.
We serve about 103 or 4 patients a day, and all but about 8 of them on average are at home. Those other 8 are at our Compassionate Care Center in Richmond. The whole idea of hospice care is that in those last months of life, when maybe curative treatments are not an option mm-hmm. anymore, what becomes important is to have expertise in how to give good pain and symptom management at the end of life, which is a different ballgame altogether.
Sure.
It does require a certain level of expertise, and that's actually been recognized medically for the last 10 years or so. They now have a board certification, just like you have internal medicine or oncology or family practice. They now have board certification in hospice and palliative medicine, and our medical director has that certification and is the one who's responsible for overseeing the care of all the patients we have, whether they're at home or at the center or in a nursing home mm-hmm. or in an assisted living facility, because we can give care wherever you are. And the idea, again, is to work, you know, to make sure that you have the highest quality of life you can have and function at the highest level for as long as possible. So we're not going to come in and give you pain medicine until you sleep all the time. That's right. Not hospice. I know some people think that's what it is. Now, sometimes if people are referred to us really late in their disease process, which is one of the saddest things we see, there isn't a lot of option at that point. They're already sort of in that bedridden state, and we just sort of continue to make sure they're comfortable.
Right.
But when it works really beautifully, when the patient and the family request hospice as early as they can, and when the physician supports it, then we typically have that patient for 6 or more months, which is great, because that means we have lots of time to get to know the patient. It's hard to help people meet those bucket list wishes if we don't even know them well enough to know what they are.
Sure.
So it gives us time to kind of figure out. Actually, our staff has to ask at every visit, what's most important to you today? That's something we're trained to ask, because we know it's a moving target. Priorities change.
Sure.
can learn a lot from people in the last months of life about what matters. And that's why priorities change for them often. So we ask that at every visit. And that's how we learn about these things. That's how we learn that there's a granddaughter 4 hours away that the grandfather needs to see very mm-hmm. much. That's how we learn a baptism matters. That's how we learn a wedding needs to happen. So that's what our staff is focused on, what's most important to you today. When we have the patient and family for several months, we also have the time to get to know the family, because one of the things that makes hospice unique is the recognition that a terminal illness affects more than the patient. Everyone who lives in the home, the caregiver, children, if there are children, grandchildren, all need support, you know, knowing how to deal with this. And frankly, I think the last big national poll on this question said that 86% of Americans want to be at home in their last months of life.
Right.
The single biggest determining factor about whether that's possible is if the caregiver can handle the care. One of our biggest jobs is to support the caregiver so he or she can continue making it possible to stay at home.
Right.
So our staff is, you know, we have a nurse available 24/7. Our staff is making visits very regularly, nursing visits and nurse aid visits, social work visits if you need and want them. We have a chaplain for spiritual care, for spiritual concerns, if that's something that the patient or family wants. So a lot of people are in and out, and a big part of their job on a daily basis is to empower that caregiver, you know, that they're doing a great job, giving them a break when they need it. That's one of the reasons people go to our Compassionate Care Center in Richmond. We're able to provide respite care so that for 5 days or up to 5 days, the patient can stay and be taken care of by our staff so that the caregiver can kind of recharge his or her batteries. And that's important from time to time. Very important, especially when a lot of our patients are older, sometimes elderly,
mm-hmm.
and so are their caregivers, and they have their own health issues and health concerns. And it's just a really hard job. And as far as I'm concerned, caregivers are a special kind of hero.
Definitely.
Who are very sort of unacknowledged for all the work they put in. And sometimes caregivers are working full time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they have children of their own in addition to a parent or another family member they're caring for. So we're just there to be your team. We're right. there to support you. You don't have to give up your doctor. Some people think that's the case. Your doctor can stay involved in your care if he or she wants to, and then we become sort of an extension of their team.
Right.
And we continue to work with them, and that doctor is going to continue to write your orders and be over your care. A lot of people think that hospice in some way hastens death. And so I always have to point out that there was a huge national study in 2009 or 10, I believe out of Duke, where they looked at hundreds of thousands of Medicare recipients. Mm-hmm. And they divided them up into those who received hospice care at some point in the last months and those who didn't. And amazingly, what they found, we've always known this, it was just nice to see it sort of backed up in a big study,
sure.
is that people who choose hospice at the end of life, on average, live 29 days longer than those who don't. That may seem counterintuitive, but it makes total sense to us because we see it every day. People just feel better at home. I don't know if it has as much to do with us as it has to do with we just enable you to stay at home. And people do better at home. They feel better at home. They heal better at home.
Right.
So, all we do is make that possible by giving you your medical care there, basically. So I think that's great news for people who've ever had that concern. And then I guess the other misconception is that you have to give up all treatments, and that's not true either. What hospice can't do is pay for curative treatments.
Right.
That's not what we're for. However, if those curative options aren't there anymore, we continue to fund and pay for any treatment that contributes to quality of life. So any medicine or treatment you take that makes you feel better on a daily basis, that's still going to be supported by us.
Yeah.
So those are just a few I like to mention that sort of are out there, and it's always best just to be armed with the facts, I guess.
Well, and there's so many misconceptions when mm-hmm. it comes to hospice just in general, because it's nobody wants to talk about
death
right. Yeah, you know, right. It's just but it's one of those things, you know, death and taxes, those are the only two real truths that you can't escape,
right.
So
you have more control over one than the other, to be honest.
That's true.
You can have more control, and I don't know, I come to hospice from a very personal standpoint. I've been involved with hospice since I was 18. I volunteered as a hospice helper when I was 18, and then I lost my grandmother. And it was one of those deaths that no family ever wishes for. Mm-hmm. This was not here. It was in Louisville. But she ended up in the hospital for something very routine. But she had a code. She coded in the middle of a procedure and was on a ventilator. So we weren't able to communicate with her. And several hours later, she died. And she was. And it's not fun to live all of your life with a sort of regret that it happened the way it did, and that who she was and the life she lived, the way she died didn't fit that.
Right.
You know, she was a woman who was, she was the matriarch of the, she was the queen bee. She ran the show in our family. Everything revolved around her. She was someone who liked to be in control, and she wasn't in control of anything in the last 18 hours of her life. And that has gnawed at every single one of us for the last 15 years. And That's not how it has to be. You know,
right.
It could have been different. We could have taken her home. It is hard to get everybody on the same page. So I think the lesson I took from it is, first of all, is you have to be your own advocate.
Mm-hmm.
Healthcare is like any other service. You have to be an advocate for what you want, for what your values are, for what's important to you. If you don't, you run the risk of playing into other people's agendas, I guess, is
right.
the right way to put it. What do you want? Make your wishes known. Make them known to your family, to your healthcare providers. And then the other personal instance was that I had a 12-year-old cousin with ovarian cancer, and she went through grueling experimental levels of chemotherapy because they want to do anything they can to save a child, of
right.
course. And I'm happy to say she did survive, and she's now an adult with a child of her own. But And this is interesting. She was a hospice patient in between treatments because the treatments made her so ill that if she hadn't been able to recover, she would not have been able to have further treatment. So while she was in between curative treatments, she qualified for hospice care.
Wow.
And I really credit hospice with holding that family together, because anybody who's had a child with a terminal illness knows it takes a toll on marriages. It's just a lot of stress, financial mm-hmm. worries. And hospice really helped support her mom and dad too, gave her really great counseling to deal with all the death that she encountered as a child in that hospital, friends who died every day. So I just saw what they could do, what it meant to have hospice involved. And while I'm talking about that, I know this is not comfortable for anyone, but I will mention that we do have pediatric patients every year.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot, you know, maybe 10 or fewer each year. But hospice is a choice for pediatric patients. And one thing that Medicare federally allows is for hospice care to be involved even if the child is pursuing aggressive treatments. That's an exception they make for pediatric patients. So that's something to be aware of. We just had a pediatric case very recently in our service area with a 12-year-old girl, and it's a great resource to have, and just be aware that you don't have to give up curative treatments to involve hospice.
And that's, I mean, these are all just amazing stories, and just to let people know. And again, like you said, you know, people don't want to talk about that sort of thing.
Right.
But if you're in that situation, you need to know.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, a lot of us have aging parents, we have grandparents, and if there's a lot of love there and affection, what you want is to make sure you honor their wishes. And,
exactly.
And it is hard to talk about, so make sure you know what they are.
Right.
There's a great resource for this online if you have internet access. It's called The Conversation Project. Just mm-hmm. Google it, and it gives you great tips for how to raise this issue without insulting your loved one or
right.
making them too uncomfortable. It's really awesome, and I highly recommend it for anybody.
The Conversation Project.
The Conversation Project.
I have to jot that down.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take another quick break here and be back to wrap up with Brenna Wallhauser from Hospice Care Plus. You're listening to Come On Home. Welcome back to Come On Home with Goosehead Joe. Once again, I am joined by Brenna Wallhauser from Hospice Care Plus. We've been talking about some of the great work that they do. Now, when we were at the break there, we were talking a little bit about how the funds raised actually get used by the organization. So inform everybody a little bit.
Oh, my gosh, so many ways. The funds raised at events like this are critical to us, and I will tell you why. We could not exist without them. I cannot underestimate how important they are. We are reimbursed. I don't want to get too scientific on people, but we're reimbursed by Medicare for our care. Mm-hmm. However, we're given a flat rate per day no matter what we do. It's about $120. So when we have a patient with Medicare, we're going to get $120 a day for the care we provide. That assumes we'll send a nurse to visit only once every 2 weeks and more if there's something that really warrants it. That's just one example. We have always believed that things change too quickly in the last months of life on a
right.
daily basis. They change. And that once every 2 weeks is not anywhere near enough. And so we send, our policy internally as nurses are to go out and do a full assessment once a week and more if needed. And often it is more, much more. And so we're providing a much higher level of care than we're reimbursed to provide.
Right.
And what that means to us on an annual basis financially is that the average cost of care per day for our patient exceeds the reimbursement we're given. That's not the best business model in the world. All I can say to you is we firmly believe that that's the level of care that is necessary to ensure excellent compassion and dignity and quality of life and quality of care in the last months. And we couldn't exist if we couldn't do that. We would not feel good about it. So, and that's what we feel like, that's what our community deserves. It's what we would want for our loved ones. And so that's what we provide. It makes a real and meaningful difference too, because another bucket list story that just came to mind is a woman named Leanne who was middle-aged, so very young, and she was dying of brain cancer. And her daughter was her caregiver. And one of the things that she made clear to us, actually her daughter mentioned it first. Her daughter said, "Mom has to live till Thanksgiving because she has made the most amazing Thanksgiving dressing every year for the past 30 years. And she doesn't write the recipe." You know, everybody knows what this is like. You have that person in your family who just throws it all together and they don't write it down. And that's what she did. She didn't ever write the recipe down. She just threw it all together. But everybody loved her dressing and it was a real highlight of the meal. And her daughter said, "I need to know how to make..." It was really a source of grief for her. What if something happens to Mama and I don't have that recipe and it's just lost?
Right.
It came for her to represent her mom's legacy. And so the mother, Leanne, said later that was something that she really did want to do. She wanted to make sure she was alive at Thanksgiving. And that not only was she living at Thanksgiving, but that she needed to be able to be at a kitchen counter for about 30 minutes to show her daughter how to make it. And that was a huge challenge because she was completely bedbound and she had tremendous metastatic cancer pain.
Mm-hmm.
So her nurse, Junie, her hospice nurse, did not go out once every 2 weeks or even once every week. In order to get Leanne to the point where she could get to that kitchen counter comfortably and comfortably cook, the whole plan of care that the physicians and the nurses and the nurse aides and social workers and chaplains worked on revolved around being at a kitchen counter for 30 minutes. And we have this number of weeks to get there. And so they did it. And it took multiple visits a week, not one visit a week.
Right.
But that's what that family needed to kind of end their story on their own terms with the things that were important to them. We can't, in healthcare, we have a tendency to want to make our agendas the most important. Mm-hmm. We need to turn you every so many hours if you're in bed.
Right.
We need to check your blood pressure every so many hours. At hospice, I think what we have the freedom to do to some extent is make that secondary. And we train ourselves constantly. You are in charge and you determine this plan of care. We could not have made that number of visits for Leanne and Karen and gotten her to the point where on Thanksgiving, which she later said was the best day of her life.
Wow.
She said it was the best day of her life. Never would have happened if we hadn't gone above and beyond what we're paid to do and what federal guidelines say we have to do.
Right.
And that would have been a real loss for Karen. And it would have been something that Leanne didn't have peace about at the end. And that would have meant we failed. So these fundraisers allow us to do those things. We just wouldn't have the resources otherwise. They are critical.
That's amazing. And you make it really hard on somebody who's trying to interview you because I'm sitting here, you know, and these stories, and they're so touching. And to know that the work that you all were doing allowed her to finish her work.
Yes, her story. It's your story. You are in control of your story. Make sure people know what you want it to be, because in those last months of life, you're going to need them to make it happen. You're going to need people to advocate for you.
Right.
You're going to need people in your corner. Hopefully it's your family first and foremost. Mm-hmm. At least find one family member you trust. Make sure that, and I'm not even talking about the legal stuff, making power of attorney, surrogate, healthcare surrogate.
Right.
That stuff's really important. But before you fill out those forms, you have some thinking to do about who that person is. Make sure there's someone you know and trust, might be family, might not, who you know will advocate for what you want in the face of anything. And then once hospice is involved, we become that team, and we're going to advocate for those things. But often you need that advocate even to make sure hospice does get involved. So, and as early as possible, the minute you can qualify, without going into a lot of detail, Medicare does have certain criteria. It's based on the condition you have. So if you have cancer or Alzheimer's or heart failure or COPD, they have a list of admission criteria, things that you medically have to meet in order to be considered appropriate for hospice.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people call us and they are interested in hospice care and they are not quite there yet medically. But it's wonderful. That's wonderful. Go ahead and do it anyway, because once you call us, what we do is we'll kind of keep in touch with you. We know that you want to have our care as soon as you're able to. And so we can sort of advocate for you along the way. As soon as you meet those admission criteria, we can help you work with your physician to get you into hospice care.
Right. It's just amazing. And I love, you know, every time I've had the opportunity to hear any of your all's staff or yeah. you know, when you're able to tell, because it's always so personal.
It is personal.
Everybody that works for hospice, it's yeah. You know, it's not just a job, it's a mission.
And, it is.
And yeah. it's wonderful. And I was kind of saying during one of the breaks that you all are such great storytellers. Mm. The stories are there, but to be able to relate that to the folks who don't know anything about that entire world.
Sure.
It's just a wonderful, it's a beautiful thing. It really is.
Well, thank you so much. And we just have to thank the community, because again, we've been around 33 years. We would not have lasted that long.
Sure.
Without the support, the donations, the volunteers. We have 112, I think, volunteers right now. We couldn't do what we do without them. We'd have to pay for another 10 staff, you know,
right.
10, 15, 20 staff. So the community has embraced and supported hospice care from the beginning. Events like the Color of Hope Hospice 5K is just another way to do that. Plus, you just get to have fun, you
right.
know. You come out and have a good time, and maybe that $25 early bird registration fee is a little less painful when you know all the wonderful things it makes possible for patients right. and families right here in Estill County and in the other five counties we serve.
Well, let's run down everything about the race
All
again.
All right, here are the basics. The Color of Hope Hospice 5K, it happens Saturday, September 26th, starts right here at 223 Broadway in Irvine. You can check in or register anytime between 8 and 8:45. Race starts at 9 a.m. You got to register. It's ideal to register before. You can register that day, but try to register before. You can register online at hospicecareplus.org. Look for the Color of Hope story. Click on it and you'll see the register now button.
Mm-hmm.
It's secure and you can register there very easily. If you don't want to register online, you can pick up a paper form at any Citizens Guarantee Bank location, Berea, Irvine, or Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do that. Now you can do online registration through September 24th. You can only do mail-in until the 21st. So keep that in mind. If you miss those two dates, you want to go ahead and just register the morning of the race. And you're welcome to do that. I guess the other thing to know is you can register for $25 only, early bird discount, through the 18th at 5 p.m. Then if you do that, you're also guaranteed to get the t-shirt you want in the size you want. And it's included in your fee. After that date, your registration fee is $30 and we can't guarantee you a t-shirt.
Wonderful. This is it's just an outstanding event. It's sounds like it's going to be just a blast, and it's right here in Irvine.
Yep.
There's going to be, so yeah, if you're driving by and you see all this weird color flying everywhere, you should have gotten involved.
Yes. Or just stop the car and
right,
come on.
Right. Well, and just to throw this out there too, if mm-hmm. you're not interested in this sort of activity and would just like to donate to
sure.
hospice, what's the easiest way folks can do that?
You can actually do it the same way I mentioned. You can, mm-hmm. you can indicate that online. In the online registration process, you can mail in your form with a fee and just say it's donation only. And, of course, you can just call us anytime. Actually, call us anytime for any level of support you want to give, whether you want to volunteer or donate. And certainly, if you think a family member, a loved one, might need hospice care, you can call us anytime. It's 1-800. Oh, my gosh, I just drew a blank for the first time in 17 years. There it is. 1-800-806-5492 or locally 986-1500. But that 800 number is helpful. We are online, hospicecareplus.org. I highly recommend you follow us on Facebook. Just search for Hospice Care Plus. We share a lot of things there that aren't on our website, and it's those more personal stories.
They are.
Photographs.
And it's really neat. I would highly recommend just search them up, Hospice Care Plus, on Facebook. And you get a little bit more insight into how everything goes.
So, yeah, that's true.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much for having us. It's been fun.
Oh, definitely. And you got me. I hung in there. You about
you
got
did
me choked
great.
Up a couple times. sincerely appreciate you coming on and sharing and letting everybody know about the race and everything that hospice does. But Brenna Wallhauser from Hospice Care Plus, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having us.
All righty. Well, we're going to take a quick break here and be right back. You're listening to Come On Home. This is Come On Home with Goosehead Joe. I tell you what, I've got another guest coming in here in a few minutes, so let's go ahead and get a little music in right now. How about some Jenkins Twins for you? Here is off of Jellicoe, The Fool.
Smoke in the air, soon to fade. Look out your window, sunshine to shade. Well, that long-lasting symphony is stuck in your head. Well, that long-lasting symphony rolls on when I'm unaware. My mind has outgrown me, and I'm well aware. Look in your mirror at your long grown out hair. You've been looking for something that's never been there. On its way, chipping away at the doubt in my head. At the end of the day, I'm on my
Jenkins Twins with The Fool off of their LP titled Jellicoe. Of course, you know I'm a Jenkins junkie, and I got a couple minutes here before the noon news break. I just want to talk a little bit about Revive River Drive that happened this past Saturday night. Of course, Again, the E-Man and his lovely wife, Katie, were there on site doing all of the sound-related work and doing a live broadcast here on 104.9. Hope you got to check it out. If you didn't, you can always go to the station homepage, WSKVFM.com, and I can't remember how the layout is, but somewhere on the page there is a spot there where you can listen to the entire recording of the live coverage. Of course, there on the cruising stage, we had the Jenkins twins and the Dirty Windows, as well as Miss Taylor Austin Dye. All of them did a fantastic job, did kind of a round robin thing where they all play two or three songs and just kind of rotate around. It was blazing hot early, especially early on in the event, and I think they were a little grateful that we rotated them out just a little bit so they could cool off a little bit and not completely bake in the sun. But definitely got to give a big shout out to the performers. We had a couple other groups, Jordan Allen and the Bellwethers and Broken, up on the railroad stage in the Ravenna Park. There were, I have no idea, I wish I had a number, but there were thousands of folks that were in town on Saturday night. And it was just an outstanding event. Now, we're going to have a conversation. There were a few folks that got a little carried away in burning out and getting a little out of control. And we are trying to figure out going forward how to deal with some of the safety issues there. Because, you know, we want everybody to have a good time, have fun, enjoy coming out and hanging out on the strip. But, you know, it was getting a little bit crazy there. And some folks were fishtailing and getting a little out of control. So we're worried about, you know, there's kids all lining the street there. And we want to make sure that nobody ends up getting hurt, because nobody wants that. So we're going to be talking to some different folks and trying to figure out how to ensure everyone's safety at the event, because any of you who were there, I think you'll agree with me, it was a great event as far as being able to pull the community together. We had a bunch of youth related organizations that were set up. I know the middle school cheerleaders, a couple of softball teams, the marching band, you know, there were different youth-related organizations that were able to, you know, sell a little bit of stuff and make some funds to help them in what they try to do. And then also, of course, we had the Chamber of Commerce tent. The Chamber kind of stepped in. You know, this event grew so quickly that, bless their hearts, Niver and Stacy, the two founding queens of Revive River Drive, it was getting a little out of control, a little bit bigger than just two people could try to handle. So the Chamber offered up, you know, hey, we'll come in and try to take care of some of this administrative responsibilities, and it's worked out pretty well so far. You know, there's always hiccups and things we have to do better, but it was an outstanding event. I have to personally say, of course, again, thanks to Ethan and Katie, all the performers. Have to say a big thank you to Mike Collins and Mike Nolan from the Mike's Travel, and Mikey's mom, Jen. They were all manning the booth. My lovely wife, Becky, came in and helped, and also Regina Robertson, one of the vice presidents of the Chamber. They were all working hard to peddle our wares. And if you're interested, if you needed a Revive River Drive t-shirt and missed out the first time, the store is open again. Just go to the Revive River Drive Facebook page. There's a link posted on there, and you can go right over and order your shirt if you missed out on sizes. So there you have it. Revive River Drive, the fourth annual, in the books. So we'll move right along, and can't wait to see you on the strip next year. As for right now, it's time for the noon news break. So make sure and stay tuned to all the news and community announcements and all that happy stuff. We'll be back in a few minutes. You're listening to Come On Home. Welcome back to Come On Home with Goosehead Joe. I am joined by a couple of lovely young ladies, Kayla McKinney and Abby Winkle. Welcome, ladies.
Hello.
Hey.
This is National Gear Up Month, correct? Okay. So Gear Up, we're going to learn a lot more about Gear Up actually next week when Lauren Rader and Mike Flynn will actually be joining me in the studio to talk about more of the mechanics and exactly what the overall program is all about. But we really wanted to hear from a couple students who are involved in the programming that Gear Up provides. So Kayla and Abby, just start off, whichever one of you wants to start. Tell me a little bit about PALS. Exactly what is that and what does it mean?
Well, PALS stands for Promise Appalachia Leadership and Service. And Abby and I had to do a lot to get into the program. It was very competitive. We had to fill out an application, and then we had to do an interview with like the people over it, and they picked us. So now we do a lot of like leadership sessions.
Mm-hmm. We do a lot of community service through it, and college trips and ACT prep, and everything we do there we bring back to air school and use.
Well, that's very cool. So so this is kind of touching on a lot of different areas that could help you in the long run, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so give me a few examples and let the folks out there know. Just specifically, what are some of the, I mean, do you get to, with learning opportunities, do you get to go to trips or trainings, anything like that?
Yes, actually this weekend we will be going to Lake Cumberland for a retreat. We'll have leadership workshops and blog workshops because we have to do a blog every month.
Tell me about this blog.
Well, basically, it's just every month we can write about whatever we want, and it goes out on Blackboard, I think. And it's like 50 people are in PALS, 40 to 50 people are in PALS, and we each write a blog every month. We get to pick what it's over, and usually it's helping students who read it like get into college-related stuff.
The blogs I've written about like ACT and like tips on how to help with that, what the importance of having a summer job and just stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So all just helpful topics.
Just like little tips and stuff.
Right. And so you do these once a month. About how long are they?
About a page or two.
Yeah.
Never long enough?
No. Right?
Okay, so you're going around and now when you all came in, you mentioned something about Vermont.
Yes.
What's up with that?
We're going to Vermont the 22nd to the through the 25th of this month. No,
next month.
Next month.
29th to the 31st.
Yeah. We're going to Vermont then, and we're going to visit colleges and do leadership training and have workshops. And
we get to like observe classrooms, and they'll show us what it's like to actually be a college student.
Well, that's pretty cool. So up to this point, do you feel like the experiences you've had, have they gotten you ready for the next step in your education?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we've visited a lot of colleges and learned about scholarships. Just everything we've done has prepared us for college life, for being a student.
We've like our leadership skills, we've really developed a lot throughout this.
Mm-hmm.
Like with all the sessions that we've done and like all the training we've had, it's really helped a lot.
So as far as leadership is concerned, how have you been able to kind of apply that right back here in Estill County?
Well, we're in the leadership at the leadership program at our school, and we try to like bring in what we've learned throughout PALS, bring it into the leadership at school so that everyone can like learn what we have learned.
Right. So it's not about rising up and becoming a dictator. Is that what you're saying?
No.
Okay. That's good.
Trying to help everybody.
That's good. So is that kind of a basis to the program? Is everything you learn is being able to spread that out to your peers?
Yes. And we are tutoring. Well, I'm tutoring. Kayla's about to get into it. We're tutoring kids at our school, like below us. We're helping them get ready for college and be confident in what they're doing. And we're also bringing in a community service project that will start like in a month.
Well, tell me more.
we're hoping to help out we haven't got it set yet, but we're hoping to help out the pregnancy center mm-hmm. and raise money for them.
Wonderful. Great organization and a real good focus there. Something that's really hyper-local because that's going to help people right here in our community. Now, I want to pick on you a little bit. When you said that you're tutoring or you're helping students below you, that means younger than you and not like the ones that are less cool than you, right?
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, freshmen and sophomores are tutoring them.
Which, and these ladies did let me know that they are juniors, so they have it all figured out at this point.
Oh, definitely.
Not quite.
So, in doing these college visits, you've said that you're kind of getting, it's not just, you know, meeting a professor or meeting a couple students. You're actually getting to go in there and see the real deal, how it really is. Do you think that makes a difference? Is that different than just taking a college day and getting the tour around campus?
Yes, definitely. Like, some of the college tours that we've been on, we've been able to, like, sit with the professors and then, like, explain stuff to us and show us stuff. And, and we've been able to talk to college students and them tell us tips about how college life really is. And being a high school student, we really don't have any idea until we have someone there telling us, showing us.
Right. And that, which, speaking from experience here, I went to college for a very, very long time. I'll be paying for it for some time, too. But, I feel like that was one of the biggest differences is, you know, in high school, your teachers really care about seeing, you know, making sure your work's turned in and making sure that things are done correctly. You know, and college professors, they're just kind of like, meh, you know, here's your assignment, do it or you don't pass. So as far as, you know, I'm assuming that you two ladies are fairly smart cookies.
Well, that's what they tell us.
Oh, yeah. Nice answer. I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV. So, you know, as far as, and we hear a lot, I get to have a lot of different folks from the school district in here, especially administrators and teachers and the leadership. It's constantly about college and career readiness to make sure that no matter what you all choose to do once you leave ECHS, that you're ready. So, I mean, it sounds to me like this is one of those just hand-in-glove situations where this is just getting you, not just getting you two ready, but preparing you to where you can help other folks get ready.
Yes.
So do you, and this is kind of a little probing question, but in, you know, how does that come up? You know, do you, you know, snap tweet it to your Facegram and, you know, try to get somebody to pay attention to what you have to say? Or are you given some opportunities to where you can actually present to other students?
We're given opportunities. Well, we make opportunities.
You make them. I like that.
We make opportunities. We, with the help of Miss Rader and, like, Mike Flynn, we go through and, you know, we start community service projects. We have ideas that we try to implement in helping students get college ready.
That was a good answer. They're doing well here. They're kind of playing off each other and figuring out who's supposed to talk when. But they're doing a great job. Now, as far as the leadership skills, when you're talking about going through leadership training, kind of what are they teaching you to do?
Well, they tell us to, like, talk with our hands and stuff like that and make eye contact.
You mean like me when I'm talking on the radio and still use my hands? Okay.
Yeah, like talk with your hands, like trying to like relate to your audience and make eye contact, make sure your voice is like loud and clear, people can understand you, and really just get your point across.
So it's really a lot about communication.
Yeah.
Well, perfect. You want a job on the radio?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know.
It's hard to look somebody in the eye when you can't see them.
Yeah.
It is kind of tough. But so do you feel like the program as a whole, has it just helped you to grow as an individual?
I think it's definitely, like, helped take us out of our shells.
Mm-hmm.
Like, get us out there, make us, like, not be afraid to stand up and, like, get our point across, like, to talk in front of people.
Right.
And stuff like that.
Now, and I always go here. Of course, I've got an 8-year-old daughter, and so I always go to thinking about this. As females, do you feel like this has empowered you to make sure that you're on the same level as the guys no matter what? Or surpass them, for that matter?
Well, yeah.
Good answer. Well, yeah. Can't beat that. And that's, you know, I love to see women in leadership positions. I had Sylvia and Summer from the Junior ROTC in here a couple weeks ago, and it just blew my mind that you had these young women that were just so strong and so in control, and to know that our ROTC is completely commanded by young women. And mm-hmm. that's just, it's fantastic. And I love it. And to see you all stepping up like you are and reaching out to make sure that all of your peers are lifted up and ready to go to the next level. It's just, it's super impressive, and you should be commended for it.
Thank you.
Very nice. We're going to take a quick break here and be back with more with these lovely, young, strong, powerful women. You're listening to Come On Home. Welcome back to Come On Home with Goosehead Joe. Again, I am joined by Abby Winkle and Kayla McKinney here. We're talking about the Gear Up program, more specifically the PALS program, and some of the leadership and community service initiatives that these young ladies are involved with. Now, I gave you a little bit of a heads up while we were at the break. I didn't want to be too mean, but given that you all are obviously leaders and developing leaders here in the community, I'd like to get your opinion on a few things. Now, one of the things that I hear more than anything else is there's nothing for the kids to do. So, one, is that true? And two, what are some of your ideas on how to improve that in our community?
Yes, it's true. And we actually were wanting to go, I think it was February the 4th,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, it was last February.
Yeah, on Children's Advocacy Day, we were wanting to go to Frankfort and present to the legislature our idea of a rec center for our community that would be focused more towards teens. And we wanted to get a pool in there, weight rooms, and just like conference rooms. But we didn't get to because it had to snow that day.
Yeah. It snowed a lot. So it wasn't just that day. But, Kayla, you want to add to that?
Well, we definitely feel that there's nothing to do. Like, being teens, we can see that there's nothing here in town for us, and everyone's always going to Richmond for something to do. They have movie theaters and skating rinks and everything there, and we don't have any of that. I feel like kids, there's nothing for them to do, and they're getting into trouble because of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an excellent point and an excellent way to present it. Kind of piggybacking on that, I know that it's, and I'm trying to think back. It's been a long time since I was your age, but I'm trying to think back and grab onto that. But looking to the leadership of the community, the government and folks that are kind of in charge, what would you like to say to them as far as, I know, okay, how often has anybody reached out to you and asked you to get involved in decision making with the community?
Rarely ever.
Not very often.
Do you feel like that's something important that could be done to improve everything?
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, we're going to grow up and we're going to be the leaders of this community, not just us, but like everyone in our school. I feel like we need to start now and have a say now because it's going to be handed to us later.
I feel like teenagers are the ones being impacted by there not being anything to do, so they should definitely have a say.
Of course, me being, I'll be gruff guy now. Well, but you don't pay taxes.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Ah, excellent, excellent. I love that. Not yet, she says. Make sure and write that down. So looking, you know, you all are talking about, you know, it's all college and career readiness. When we're looking at the career prospects, there's not a whole lot of industry in Estill County right now. And believe you me, it's really difficult to try to find anything sizable to bring in. So from your opinion, whether it be, you know, you said you think you might be future leaders in this community, do you feel like you'll be here and look, you know, Richmond, Berea, Lexington, what have you, for employment? Or what about entrepreneurship and starting your own gig? I'd just like to know your all's feelings on that.
Well, I feel like I would definitely, like, this is my hometown. This is where my family is.
And you are a McKinney.
I definitely have some roots here, but also feel like that there are places that have better opportunities for me and for my future family.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm always going to be a part of this community, and I always want to help out as much as I can. But I also feel like there are a lot more opportunities going to Richmond and Lexington, and even if I did get a job there somewhere, not here, I would always have help. I would always help in this community. I'd want to.
Like, my family's here. My family's always going to be here.
So basically you're saying no matter what life throws at you and where it leads you, you're not going to forget your roots.
Yes. Exactly.
That's excellent to hear. But as far as, you know, like you said, you went to, your plans were to go to the legislature, meet with our state rep, state senator, and talk about this idea for a rec center. And I'm assuming looking for some funding from the state, correct?
Yes, we were hoping for a grant.
So, yeah, everybody wants the grant, of course. But when it comes to that, why not look at business opportunities to do something along those lines? Why do we ask for, why are we looking for the grant when we could try to put something together to actually start the business to do that here?
What do you mean, put something together?
Oh, excellent. Okay. She's interested. I've got her interest. So, okay. Rather than look at a government-run rec center, what have you, what about the prospects of, you know, an actual business that, which that, whether it be, you know, movies or whatever the teens like to do now. I don't know, a texting parlor, is that is that a thing? It should be.
An idea.
But actually look at, you know, are there possibilities to open a business to offer some of these things to give teens a place to hang out?
Honestly, we were hoping that bringing in a rec center would, like, stimulate the community, and hopefully more businesses would come and add on, and then the community would grow.
Very nice. So you actually did have a proposal.
We had.
Yeah. You've thought this through.
We had
through.
It all put together.
Yep.
So one little skiff of snow, and that snuffed you out. Come on now. Well, and okay, which I realize your junior year is kind of your, I guess, most intense year.
Oh,
because once you're seniors, you know, you're done.
To college. It's such a
busy year, and there's so many extra things to do when you're a senior. So, you know, you're still fairly close to the beginning of this junior year. When I'm talking to you this time next year, what are you going to be able to tell me that you've accomplished in this junior year? You can shoot past a little bit. You can look a little bit big. That's fine. I won't hold you to it.
Hopefully have our community service project implemented and thriving.
We could try to go back to the legislature and maybe actually get a rec center in.
Excellent.
And if that doesn't work, we could try fundraisers for that too. It would take a lot, but I mean, I'm sure we could do something.
Have you all been exposed to, at this point, you know, there's a few really good things that are going on that are trying to make some progress. The River City Players, and of course they are doing some productions. They have open auditions and all that out at the high school, and are working toward trying to save the Mac Theater and rehab that and turn it into a community center. Not quite a rec center, but a place where there can be productions and things like that. You've got the Estill Action Group, which most of those folks aren't too much older than you all. They're mostly in their mid to late 20s. So they're really trying. They're doing things called Actioneer Adventures, where once a month they're actually just going out, whether it be a hike or going canoeing or going to a cave, different things around the county, just to give people an opportunity to go out and do these things. As high school students, how much do you actually hear about these things?
This is the first I've heard about it.
Yep.
All right. Susan Hawkins, Lindsay, see, you need to go out and reach out to these younger folks, because they really don't know what's going on. And see, yet again, and I feel like I'm one of those people that, you know, I'm not going to say I'm hip, but because if I did, that would be even less hip than saying. Anyway, but I try to make sure that we are listening to the younger folks, because like you said, you know, you're going to be taken over. It's going to be your responsibility as we move forward. So why not get you involved now, so you know what to expect and how to make it better? But even the cool programs that we have going on, and if you all don't know about them, how is that helping? So how can we fix that? How can we reach those juniors at the high school?
I think even just coming out and talking to us, people would be, I mean, students would really want to get involved, because that's something they can do. That's something they can spend their time doing and get involved with, and
it's great. Like you had me intrigued talking about going on hikes and stuff. This is the first I've heard about it. I would want to do that, and I'm sure lots of other people my age would want to also.
Do we even try to hang up flyers at the high school? Does anybody even look? I can tell by the looks on your face.
Not
no,
really.
It's just part of the scenery, right?
Yeah.
Well, we've just now gotten folks in our community used to Facebook, and now we're told that all of the younger people have fled from Facebook. So,
well, the old people came and run us out.
Exactly. Exactly. To put it frank, that's the thing. Everything's gone digital, and it's all online now. But if you all keep running from us, how are we supposed to find you to tell you when there's something cool going on?
I don't know. Step out your door and yell or something. I don't know.
So there you have it. From the next generation of leaders, folks, stick your head out the door and holler. That is the way you reach them. are there any other? You've got quite a few people listening right now. Of course, we're recording this. We'll post it on the WSKVFM website, so you can go and listen to it anytime you want.
Oh, great.
But are there any other issues that are kind of burning that you'd just like to throw out there? And I know this is a big question to kind of plunk on you and on live radio, but, you know, I mean, are feeling misrepresented or underrepresented as a teenager in Estill County or anything else? What's something that's weighing on your mind you'd like to get out there? That's a tough question. Yeah, they both look to the teacher. I think that was one of those save us faces. And at any time, if you'd like to get back to me and let me know one of those things, I'd be happy to share that with the listeners, because I guarantee you there are a lot of folks right now that are very interested in what you all have to say and what you think. We just don't show it well enough. We need to get out there and say, hey, strong, powerful young women, what can we do to fix the things that are wrong? Because you're getting the knowledge and the experience that you need to have really well-educated opinions. So I applaud you all, not only for applying and getting accepted into such a competitive program, but grabbing onto it with both hands and really making something happen with it. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
So does this program, does it continue through your senior year, or are you done this year?
It continues. Yes.
Yeah, I think it goes through our sophomore year of college, because right now the people who are in it are juniors and sophomores. So when we're sophomores and they're juniors, I think that's when it's going to come.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that, though.
Yeah.
Very neat. Now, I would like to leave you all with a challenge, because I think you're ready to run away from me screaming. As you're considering some of your blog posts, I challenge you to think about the big question I asked you that was really mean of me to ask. But, you know, what are some of the things that you all as teenagers do you feel like you can really affect? What's some of the change that you think you can make happen, and some of the things that need to be changed in our community to make it not only better overall, but better for folks your age? Because we all need to listen to your answers. So I would love for you to consider things like that. If you don't want to make it public, you can send it to me privately. That would be fine. But I would love to know your all's opinions on how we can make our world better.
Okay.
They're saying that. They're like, okay, all right, strange guy, just let us off the radio. But Kayla McKinney, Abby Winkle, with the Gear Up Pals program. Again, I applaud you all. You've done a wonderful job, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us this morning.
Thank you for having us.
They say, yes, get me out of here. All right, we're going to take a quick break and be right back. You're listening to Come On Home. Welcome back to Come On Home with Goosehead Joe. Forgot my name for a second. I have been inspired, to say the least, by Miss Winkle and Miss McKinney. So I'm going to do another Jenkins Twins song for you this morning. Here is Plant a Whole New World.
I've never been told how to go about the things, love and the things. one step in and one step out, and you're on your own. In a blink of an eye, you'll be knocking on your own door. Break the future's vision. I'll climb this mountain on my own. If it was up to me, well, I'd spread it evenly. And I'd plant a whole new world. Changes that need to be, 'cause everyone comes and everyone leaves. Trees still growing, cities still fall, everyone out here is oblivious to it all. One step in and one step out, and you're on your own. In a blink of an eye, you'll be knocking on your own door. Step in and one step out, and you're on your own. In a blink of an eye, you'll be knocking on your own door. Break the future's vision. I'll climb this mountain on my own. If it was up, I'd spread it even, and I'd plan a whole new world. Well, I'd plan a whole new world.
Well, don't you never let no woman ruin your mind. Don't you never let no woman.
righty. I threw a little Old Crow Medicine Show in there for you to get us almost to the end of today's Come On Home. I got to say a big shout out and thank you to Brenna Wallhauser from Hospice Care Plus, and of course, my powerful young ladies, Kayla McKinney and Abby Winkle, who gave us their insight onto the Gear Up program, PALS, to be more specific, and all of the great stuff that they're doing, and their thoughts on where we can and should be headed as a community, because we need to reach out to those young folks and get their opinions. They really do matter. When these folks take over, we need them to know what we've been up against at the same time. So we got to get everybody working together and on the same page. But that being said, as for me, it looks like I'm just about out of here, and I do sincerely hope in the week to come you are kind to yourself and kind to one another. Have a great week, everybody.
How could life be so cold? Where did all the water go that my boat was floating on yesterday? Has my ship run aground, or have I finally found that the ocean I was on was just a bay? And as I stand here on the shore, I can hear the ocean roar. The tide's gone out, I'm stranded on my own. Not in love, not a friend, but on God I can depend to show me the light and safely lead me home. And I'll sing those old songs again, and I'll thank the Lord for every place I've been. And I'll start my life anew some sweet day, singing praise the Lord for showing me the way. Singing praise the Lord for showing me the way.
Thank you. Them old regular Baptist roots come out every now and then.